From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gastina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, two warring factions of Democrats in the state Senate reunite. Our political observer Alan Shartok shares his thoughts on Governor Cuomo's role in bringing Democrats back together in the Senate. And Plattsburgh joins a growing list of cities suing pharmaceutical companies over the opioid crisis. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. Two warring factions of Democrats in the state Senate are rejoining forces as pressure is mounted from the party's left-leaning base for a reunification. But as the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt reports, the Democrats are still one vote short of the 32 seats they need to regain the majority in the Senate.
The nearly decade-long split between the mainstream Democrats in the Senate and the Independent Democratic Conference is over. At a hastily arranged news conference in Governor Cuomo's New York City offices, Cuomo says it's essential that the Democrats get back together to fight a common enemy, President Donald Trump.
And the common enemy is defeating Trump and Ryan and McConnell and defeating their agenda and taking over the New York State Senate so we can protect this state the way it needs to be protected.
Senator Andrea Stewart-Cousins, who sat next to Governor Cuomo in the announcement, will remain the leader of the Senate Democrats and the only female legislative leader.
It has certainly been something that we have wanted to see for many, many years.
As part of the deal, Stewart-Cousins is giving up her deputy leader, Senator Mike Gianaris, though Gianaris will still head the Democrats' election efforts. Senate IDC leader Jeff Klein is giving up more, though. He will no longer rule a separate conference. He will instead become Senator Stewart-Cousins' deputy leader. Klein says everyone had to make a sacrifice.
And I always remember my grandfather always saying, sometimes you have to take a step back before you can take two steps forward. That's what we're doing here today. I believe we're taking two very important steps forward.
The IDC formed in January of 2011, just hours before Cuomo's first State of the State address. At times, the IDC has entered a ruling arrangement with the Republicans and has helped the GOP retain control of the Senate, even when Republicans did not have enough seats to control the chamber on their own. Cuomo's been criticized by the left in his party for condoning the IDC and for not doing enough to help Democrats pick up seats in the Senate. Actress Cynthia Nixon, who is challenging Cuomo in a Democratic primary, has been highly critical of the governor's history of warm relations with the Republicans in the Senate and his perceived lack of effort to get more Democrats elected to the chamber. Nixon says Cuomo has enabled the GOP to keep power in the Senate, and as a result, many progressive measures, including the DREAM Act, the Child Victims Act, and strengthening reproductive rights for women, have been blocked. Nixon, at an event to advocate for clean drinking water in the eastern New York village of Hoosick Falls, was asked by reporters whether the governor's actions had anything to do with her candidacy.
I'm very proud that I'm running, and I'm very glad that I'm running. And if in 2.5 weeks of our campaign we've succeeded in reconciling the IDC for the first time in 8 years, well, we're just thrilled and we're just going to keep going.
Nixon says the last-minute efforts to reunify the Democrats is too little too late, though, likening it to someone setting their own house on fire for 8 years and watching it burn. She said that finally turning on a hose doesn't make you a hero. Cuomo says the Democrats had already tentatively agreed to reunite after special elections for two Senate seats are held April 24th, so he only moved up the plan 2 weeks.
Yeah, it had nothing to do with it. The special election is the driving force, and we want to make sure we're all working together for that special election.
Democrats were already heavily favored to win the special election. The Senate Republican leadership reacted angrily to the announcement. Senate GOP spokesman Scott Reif said in a statement, "Let's be honest, the only reason that any of this is happening now is because Andrew Cuomo is scared to death of Cynthia Nixon." In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Well, Alan,
you have said this time and time again since Democrats formed what's called the Independent Democratic Conference in the state legislature, caucusing with Republicans in the state Senate, that the governor could come in and get the Democrats to reunite. That has now happened, minus one, Simca Felder, who caucuses with the Republicans and could keep their majority intact. But quite a move yesterday, something that seems to have fallen right into your prediction.
That's right, David. And an interesting part of this is the Working Families Party. Now, clearly, Cuomo is worried about them giving Cynthia Nixon this third-party designation. We know that if Molinaro's campaign, if he's the candidate or John DeFrancisco, there's a possibility of a split vote a la Nader, and they're worried about that. In addition, there is, of course, the question at the Working Families Party. Some of the labor unions are fiercely in favor of Cuomo, while much of the rank and file, and these are individual voters, are committed to Cynthia Nixon. And so this little third party now becomes a kingmaker, and I can't but believe that Andrew Cuomo must be very aware of that and be concerned. So, yes, this is something that happened because the governor did what I always said he could do. He brought them into a room and said, "Okay, boys, this is what we're going to do." And I am sure that's what happened. Cynthia Nixon now comes out, and she says, of course, he could have done this from day one, but he didn't because he kept the Republicans in power. I happen to think that's true.
And what about the issue of the larger, well, I guess not so much a rumor anymore, that he's interested in running for president and gathering his liberal bona fides?
Well, I think that's right, David. Look, he's moved left. We know that when he came on in the beginning, he came on as a sort of conservative, blue dog-ish guy. He alienated the teachers. He's made his peace with the leaders, at least, of the teachers' union. And he has moved steadily to the left. Now with the Nixon challenge, he's really quite concerned. So that is obviously what he's doing. He's moving left. Cynthia Nixon is saying, hey, come on, this is hypocritical. You know you could have done this in the beginning, from day one. As I say, I think that's right.
Assuming they end up with the majority, no one to blame.
Yes. Now, remember that if he runs for president, as you've just suggested, David, some guy's going to stand up and say, how come you kept the Republicans in power all that time? He said, I did not. I'm the one who turned it all around and got them back there. Yes, but it took him a long time to do that.
Meantime, Alan, one of the Republican candidates for governor, Mark Molinaro, made his campaign official this week. He started in Tivoli, where he was the mayor, began his political career, and then another stop in Albany and further stops during the week in western New York. Does he have a chance to beat Cuomo?
Well, you know, you never know. Look who's president of the United States right now. That wasn't going to happen, remember? However, this is an anti-Trump year in an anti-Trump state. It's going to be a very hard lift. I have listened to the rhetoric of Mark Molinaro, a man who I like very much, and I'm a little disturbed by the fact that some of the rhetoric sounds somewhat Trumpian. You know, make the state something again. You know, you hear that kind of stuff, and your hair goes up at the back of your neck. Nevertheless, if Cynthia Nixon gets the Working Families Party nomination, and if there's a certain amount of anti-Cuomo antipathy around, anything is possible. Although I think if one were betting on this, and I know such betting is strictly forbidden, I wouldn't bet against Cuomo in this election, not this year, not with $31 million that we know about, not with his moves left, not with the kind of support that he's getting from those people who, you know, should be counted on. Some of them go a little too far. We saw one of his supporters, Christine Quinn, just so happens to be lesbian, accusing Cynthia Nixon, who is also a lesbian, of being an unqualified lesbian. Well, that came back and hit her right in the face.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gastina. After saying in January he would not enter the race for New York governor, Dutchess County Executive Mark Molinaro reconsidered. This week, in his hometown of Tivoli, where his political career began in the 1990s, the Republican kicked off his campaign. The Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn was at Tivoli Village Hall for the announcement.
Molinaro, in his second term as county executive, was in Tivoli Village Hall to officially kick off his campaign for governor. The move comes after Molinaro said in February he was reconsidering a run following a draft Molinaro effort.
I think that we need problem solvers in New York. I think we need people who understand the very dignity of public service.
The draft effort came after State Senate Deputy Majority Leader John DeFrancisco announced he would seek the GOP nomination, and Brian Kolb had left the race. Prior to Kolb's brief campaign, he and Molinaro had discussed sharing a ticket, and Kolb has thrown his support behind Molinaro, as have several GOP party chairs across the state. Molinaro's first announcement of the day was in Tivoli, where in 1994 he was elected as a village trustee at age 18, becoming the youngest elected official in state history. 1 year later, he won the race for mayor. At the time, he was the youngest mayor in the country. He served as a state assemblyman for 5 years and was elected county executive in 2011 at age 37. Molinaro was slated to make a second campaign announcement in Albany Monday afternoon. State Republican Party Chairman Ed Cox told WAMC's Alan Shartok on a recent Capital Connection show that the process of running more than one candidate for the gubernatorial nomination is a healthy one.
As people who take a look at, really care about the people in New York State and want to undo these job-killing policies of Governor Cuomo, now they're looking to say, you know, we can get in and maybe we can win this thing and do the right thing for the people in New York State.
Former Erie County Executive Joel Giambra recently ended his bid for the Republican nomination for governor and will instead seek the independence and reform party lines. Molinaro's campaign theme is Believe Again, and he is using it as a hashtag on Twitter. Although he hasn't made it official, Democratic Governor Andrew Cuomo is expected to seek a third term.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
Seven Democratic candidates hoping to challenge Republican Congresswoman Elise Stefanik of New York's 21st District in November came together for an informal meet and greet in Saratoga Springs recently, and the Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard was there.
The Meet the Candidates event at the Saratoga Springs Public Library was well attended. Hosted by Saratoga County Young Democrats, the event allowed anyone interested to shake hands and chat with each of the seven candidates vying for the Democratic nomination in the race for the 21st Congressional District, which runs from Saratoga County to the Canadian border. Organizer Dan Baruch said the Young Democrats wanted to do something different than a traditional debate for curious voters.
They haven't had a chance to interact with those candidates individually yet. All they've been able to do is sit at a forum and listen to the same old questions.
At the start of the event, the candidates were each given 3 minutes to deliver an elevator pitch on themselves and their campaigns. First up was Dylan Radigan, a former MSNBC host. Radigan took aim at political and financial corruption in Washington.
How do we get like this? Our liberty, our planet is at stake, and we're talking about nonsense. You can indulge that to a point, but when the world is changing as fast as it is, and it is changing as fast as it ever has right now, indulging a broken political system is a matter of life and death.
Next up was David Mastriani, a Saratoga Springs oncologist. Mastriani touted his career experience and ideas in healthcare.
First, allow Medicare to negotiate for drug prices and supplies and use the free market. That's what it's good at. And the second thing we can do is expand it across all ages. I believe this would transform us. I believe it would transform us as human beings because we would no longer have the indignity of not having a card and being afraid to go get care. I believe it would transform our economic situation.
Following Mastriani was Patrick Nelson, a progressive activist and former aide to Democratic State Assemblyman Phil Steck. Nelson has frequently mentioned the legacy of Senator Bernie Sanders as an influence on his campaign.
We do not have the opportunity to play to a moderate base. We do not have the ability to not campaign boldly on Medicare for All, to not campaign boldly on getting corporate money out of politics, to not campaign boldly on solving the crisis of climate change.
But Nelson also took time in his introduction to address what he called a whisper campaign against him. He briefly resisted yielding after his 3 minutes.
There's been a whisper campaign against my campaign. I need to say this.
No, everyone gets 3 minutes.
Nelson was given the chance to finish his thought at the conclusion of the program. Next was Don Boyajian, an attorney. He touted his legal experience as an asset for the North Country.
I worked in the AG's office and the Environmental Protection Bureau. And right now, as a town attorney, I'm representing communities all around upstate New York that really need somebody to fight and win for them, whether it's on getting funding for infrastructure or in the opioid epidemic. Today, we just began representation of the city of Plattsburgh, among other counties and cities within upstate New York, against the pharmaceutical companies, because we need somebody that is fighting and winning for us.
Following Boyajian was Katie Wilson, a small business owner and activist from Keene. Wilson took aim at the second-term Republican incumbent and her message to voters.
What are they going to see that is different than Stefanik, who's clearly part of the establishment, who clearly is out of touch with everyday life in New York 21? Who are they going to trust? Who's the girl behind the counter at Stewart's going to vote for? Because that's what we have to think about. This is about winning. We are all on the same team.
Tedra Cobb, an entrepreneur and former St. Lawrence County legislator, said she has experience reaching across the party divide.
I learned those values from my parents. I have 9 adopted siblings and 1 biological brother. So I learned at a very, very early age to reach across the table and to compromise and to make sure that everybody got what they needed. I also learned frugality. My mother was the queen of frugality. She had a dish, chicken surprise. You find the chicken, I'll be surprised.
Last up was Emily Martz, who spoke of her work in economic development and experience teaching economics at Paul Smith's College and at Clarkson University. Martz said every child has the right to realize their full potential.
And I'm going to help reorient Congress towards this priority of a just world by putting to work my 20 years of work in the public service realm through volunteer and social services, and my over 20 years in business, helping families to create financial wealth and stability.
To hear more from each of the candidates, as well as a recent conversation with Congresswoman Stefanik, visit WAMC.org. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Lucas Willard.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Officials in the city of Plattsburgh have joined a growing list of municipalities planning to sue pharmaceutical companies over the opioid crisis. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley explains.
A somewhat innocuous item appeared for approval on the Plattsburgh Common Council agenda. It stated, quote, resolved, the Common Council approves that the mayor is authorized to sign Boyajian retainer agreement for opioid litigation, unquote. Before councilors voted, Mayor Colin Reed briefly explained the measure.
We'll see if we can protect people who suffered harm from the opioid problem as a consequence of over provision of opioid drugs by manufacturers and providers.
The New York State Department of Health is required to report on opioid-related data and prevention efforts. According to its opioid annual report published in October 2017, quote, the age-adjusted rate of all opioid overdose deaths per 100,000 population in New York State doubled between 2010 and 2015, unquote. Opioids in the report include those that are prescribed and illegal opioids such as hydrocodone, oxycodone, or fentanyl. The lawsuit the city is signing on to is being coordinated by the Albany law firm Dreyer Boyajian. Founding partner Donald Boyajian says lawsuits are being filed across the country.
Various municipalities going from states to counties to cities and even towns and villages are understanding the fact that they have some rights to try to recoup some of the expense that they've incurred as a result of the epidemic.
Boyajian notes that technically the effort is a centralized action rather than a class action. Mayor Reed says there is no cost to the city to join.
We're banding together to try to recoup some of the costs from what we contend is an overly lax system for the manufacture and distribution of pain-killing drugs to the point where in some communities the number of prescriptions seem to outnumber the number of citizens, so clearly there's a really imbalance and some improprieties.
Boyajian explains that in passing the resolution, the city is signing up for an analysis to understand the costs it has incurred to respond to the opioid crisis.
This is a real problem in virtually every municipality, in that there's increased numbers of EMS and first responders responding to overdose and other issues, so it involves costs for police and for fire and for the drugs which are administered. Cities that have medical examiners have costs. Cities that have public hospitals have costs. Now, Plattsburgh does not, but the whole idea is that those increased costs really should be borne by what we believe are the people who are really responsible for this epidemic, at least in part, and to hold them accountable for some of those costs.
In early March, Executive Director of the New York State Association of Counties, Stephen Aquario, was on a panel at the National Association of Counties Legislative Conference in Washington discussing opioid-related litigation. According to the national group, several states and more than 100 counties filed lawsuits in 2017 against pharmaceutical manufacturers and distributors of the drugs. While some cities, towns, and villages are now joining the lawsuit, Aquario said almost all counties in New York have already joined the litigation.
We provide the most services to those in need and the public at large. Criminal justice services, medical examiner costs, toxicology lab costs, police services, mental health, addiction counseling, substance abuse services, the impact in foster care. And of course, court costs, prosecution, probation. There are many, many costs associated with this, and we will aggressively pursue those damages through litigation.
The lawsuits do not target individual physicians.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1814. Or just listen to our podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.